This episode of RHR was brought to you by Unchained. Unchained is here building out the financial services platform for Bitcoin Standard. Their cornerstone product is their Vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig Vault where you hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. This is a collaborative custody model. They're expanding the offerings for their Vault where you can hold 1 key and you can delegate keys to other institutions. You can hold no keys if you're an enterprise level. They have a lending desk as well. You can use Bitcoin as collateral. If you're a business, to get out a U.S. dollar loan. They have an IRA product. If you want to roll your fiat IRA into Bitcoin, Unchained makes it very easy. They're expanding their product offering every day. They have a trading desk if you want to buy large sums of Bitcoin and send it straight to cold storage, multi-sig cold storage. They make it very easy. Go to unchained.com, set up a call with their consultation team today, their concierge service team. Use the code RHR for $50 off that consultation. Unchained.com. Use the code RHR. This episode of RHR was also brought to you by good friends at CoinKite. They make the best hardware in the space, including this block clock, which is right behind me. Their hardware wallets are the best. I use the Cold Card Q. It's been my daily driver for many months now, and I think it is the best hardware wallet on the market. It is a beautiful form factor. Looks somewhat like a BlackBerry. It's got a battery pack. You never have to plug it into an internet connected device. However, it is QR code and NFC compatible. It's got a QR scanner and an NFC compatible device in it. They just pushed push TX functionality to the Cold Card Q firmware. Actually happened yesterday. And so now if you want to construct and sign a transaction on the Cold Card and then broadcast it via NFC and mempool.space, you can do that with your phone very easily. Best hardware in the space. Go to coinkite.com, pick up a Q, pick up a Cold Card MK4, pick up the SATS cards, the tab signer, the block clocks. If you want the best hardware, go to CoinKite.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Welcome to the 2024 presidential election pre-party. I dressed up. We've got a massive debate tonight.
A master debate.
We got a couple master debaters up on stage.
Before we get started, I just wanted to say happy birthday to Ride or Die Freak, Ben. Here's to you.
Here's to you, Ben. Hope you're having a good one. Hope you're excited for the presidential. How lucky is Ben? His birthday falls on the same night as the 2024 presidential election debate.
Who would have guessed?
Ah, what a day. What a time to be alive. Tight rip today, freaks. As you can tell, we're a little late. Uncle Marty had a meeting he had to go to. That's why I'm a little dressed up today. Hope you guys like me, my non-casual attire. I clean up well, I like to think. But a lot going on. Not only is it Ben's birthday, it's the week Julian Assange was let free.
Dude,
after a plea deal.
Never thought I'd live to see the day.
Really. Neither did I. What do you think happened? You think this is a political move by the Biden administration to win some favor?
3 days before the debate.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if that's a topic of debate tonight.
I think they were worried that Trump was going to use it as a wedge issue. He already said he was going to commute Ross's sentence and get him out of jail. He was like steps away from saying free Assange on the debate stage.
Yeah. Yeah, I was not expecting it. It came out of nowhere. This extradition battle between the UK and the US has been going on for well over a year now. Julian left high security prison in the UK, flew to the Pacific Island. I forget exactly which one, which is a U.S. territory a bit north of Australia, sat in front of a judge to commence or consummate the plea
not
deal.
Consummate.
And then is home in Australia. This is pretty massive.
I knew the island, but now it's escaping me. It doesn't really matter. I will say, like, part of the deal was he had to step foot on U.S. soil, and I do not blame him for not trusting going anywhere near the continental United States.
And it looked way more convenient for him if he wants to get home to Australia. That island was much closer then.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a self-preservation thing, but really good to see. Just really wonderful news. It's been a long time coming. What they did to him was incredibly fucked up.
I would define it as a form of torture.
Yeah. I mean, he was basically in solitary for, I think, over 6 years in the UK.
Yeah. And imagine waking up one day, all right, you're free. Then he's traveling. It's the biggest story in the world. Gets out of a plane, is just bombarded by paparazzi and journalists flashing at him. That's got to be a jarring experience.
What, coming home to Australia?
Coming home, not only that, but going from like solitary confinement to the focus of the world solely on you.
And then, I mean, and before that, he was essentially in self-inflicted, very confined situation in the Ecuadorian embassy, which is like not a real embassy in London. It's like an office park, it's like three rooms. The whole point was they didn't even have like a parking garage connected, so they like couldn't get him out.
What are the details of the plea agreement? There was a lot of rumors going that it was to delete the DNC emails.
Well, the DNC emails thing was that's fake news perpetrated by Blue Checks, like Mario Narfall or whatever his fucking scammer is. Because those were already deleted. They were deleted in like 2022. The Clinton emails are still there. Like you could do like very basic research to realize the DNC emails didn't just immediately get deleted. But Mario and others don't really give a shit about that. They just slap breaking on something to try and get some engagement out of what is otherwise a very good news, a positive, heartwarming thing that happened.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, I'm sure he agreed to some things behind the scenes that we don't know about, right? The thing we do know about is that he pled guilty. So like there's some elements of saving face, and he was served with time served, right? So like his time in solitary already granted him that, so he immediately got released home. The jet that he took to that island on the way back to Australia, he had to pay for out of pocket, which some anonymous Bitcoiner paid for it, essentially. They had a donation address, and some Bitcoiner sent 8 Bitcoin. Now, there is some speculation among engagement news accounts and Blue Checks that was Cobra Tate.
It wasn't. I mean, he tried to take credit for it.
Yeah, he's a fucking dipshit. There's no shot in hell it was him.
Hey, man, he's a really good kickboxer. I'd be careful of your words, man. He'll come leave Dubai or Romania.
There was one comment by someone that I thought like really nailed it on the head. Like if it was him, it would have been live streamed. The donation 100% would have been live streamed. Yeah. Look, if the Anon wants to come out, they can sign a message. But they obviously didn't want to be known. But I know for a fact it wasn't Andrew Tate. And I know for a fact it's not a single person out there who's claiming it's them. So it is what it is. But it's pretty sad. It's pretty sad to see the two sides of that, right? Which is liars trying to take credit for it and
a heroic martyr just like getting his freedom and be like, ah.
And the whole DNC leaks thing. And then the other thing is like, obviously, I'm you know, I use Nostr heavily. Like, there's a lot of Nostr users that are like, oh, we got to get Julian on Nostr, like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, let the dude just live in peace for a little bit.
Let him sleep in his own bed for one night.
Yeah, just enjoy his family. He should just enjoy his family. He's done enough. He's done more than most of us will ever accomplish. Like, don't ask what Julian does next. Ask what you will do to
live up to the
movement that he started.
Yeah.
Or helped really push forward, if not start. And I will say that, like, if anything, like, if WikiLeaks does delete anything, like, most of that stuff, anything of value has been, you know, copied and saved by many, many people. And if it hasn't, it's been a massive failure. And I think long term, Nostr does fix this. Like, I think the next WikiLeaks is essentially, like, they're just going to publish directly to Nostr, and it won't require a major organization. Like, I remember when WikiLeaks first hit the scene, one of the big revelations for me as a young kid was, like, it ruined a ton of blockbuster movies, because there was, like, this blockbuster movie template where it's like, good person finds out that, like, these evil corporations or something were doing something bad. And then for 2 hours, you just watch them, like, getting shot at and stuff, like, trying to get the truth out. And instead, like, once WikiLeaks came out, like, you could just send it to WikiLeaks and they would publish it and the movie would be over in, like, 5 minutes. But of course, like, the big issue with WikiLeaks was it's a central point of failure. With something like Nostr, when you have this open permissionless protocol, you don't need that central publishing house. Anyone can just publish to Nostr and broadcast it to the world and have it signed and relayed around everywhere. And you don't need that single centralized point of failure. So it's really an evolution of what WikiLeaks enabled.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, but I zapped that note that you sent out there, because I agree. I think Nostr is a great solution to that problem of getting good information out
yesterday?
There. I did.
Have you zapped today?
I have zapped today.
Well, thank you for your sats. I believe I zapped you as well.
Weird robot. Looks like your site's down. You better go fix it.
Yeah, it's firewalled now.
Well, that guy.
That wasn't me doing that.
Did you have Parker block it on the comments?
It's people at Unchained.
You had Parker block it.
What is what's the website?
Has Marty zapped dot today.
Has Marty zapped dot today. Let's see, I'm on the Wi-Fi here. Let me get it.
Ask not what Assange can do for you. Ask what you can do to further his cause. There you go.
Yeah, I'm getting a welcome to Nginx. Looks like your site's down, weirdo robot.
You got offended by last week and just pulled it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's overwhelmingly good news. And, you know, I'm political football, this or that, whatever. I'm glad Julian and his team were able to seize the moment and whatever momentum they had to make that happen and come to fruition. Because I really never expected it.
No, I mean, we've been covering this for many years. We've both spoken to Gabe, Julian's brother, Gabriel Shipton. And yeah, it's great to see. I mean, and don't think you're listening right now, but Julian, thank you for what you've done. I mean, Matt, you mentioned earlier, WikiLeaks was critical in my formation as a young man in the early 2000s, really helped highlight just how corrupt the world is, whether it was the leaks about the Middle East wars, DNC leaks, Clinton leaks, a bunch of other leaks. And it's very cypherpunk what they did. It's like, hey, the last true journalists, one of the last true journalists in the world, is giving people the information. They deserve to know, what is your government doing with your tax dollars? That's why I became a political prisoner, because he simply made us all aware of what our government was doing with our tax dollars. Not good things.
Yeah.
Do you think he gets back behind the helm of WikiLeaks?
I hope not. Like, I really, like, if he was my friend, like, we're not friends, but like, if he was my buddy and we were having a heart to heart, like, we're having a whiskey together, I'd be like, dude, you've done enough. Just like, step away. just step away. Enjoy the rest of your life. There's plenty of people ready to pick up where you left off and continue to push forward. Like, you don't have to. And, you know, yeah, just.
You have to imagine there's like an ounce of the Count of Monte Cristo in him right now, where he's like, I am going to get back at these motherfuckers.
He's never lacked dedication or willpower, right? He's exhibited a shit ton of it, more than most people ever could even imagine exhibiting. But like I said, if I was having a whiskey with him, I'd be like, dude, just don't. Just chill out. Like, he's in Australia right now. It is his home country, but you know, Australia's not the best place to ruffle feathers to begin with, right? And like, their government is like trying to impose KYC on social media and shit, digital IDs to access Facebook and all this other insane dystopian crap. So not the best jurisdiction to do it from. As he's learned, it doesn't really matter what jurisdiction you're in if you're pissed off the U.S. government. But who knows? Like, it could be like 3 weeks and he could just be, you know, going off. That would not surprise me either.
That would jack me up. But I agree with you.
I just want to... I know it's like my, like, I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. I know my like disappointment on like Bitcoin Twitter culture and like influencer culture is probably getting old at this point for most freaks. It's like, you've either joined me on Noster or you're just sick of me talking about it. But like, really, you like fall for the Andrew Tate nonsense. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, grow a fucking spine, grow a brain. You know, like, the guy has got 10 million followers, like, shilling daddy coin to people. Have you been following the daddy coin thing? It, like, only came on my radar because he pretended it was his donation.
No, what's daddy coin?
And like, there's a bunch of big Bitcoin accounts that were like, oh, like, it was Andrew Tate. Like, it's confirmed. There's like millions of people out there that believe it and will just never not believe it, that he was the one who did the donation.
That's bottom G. Like, come on, bottom guy. G. Actions there, freaks. Not top G.
Like, he even looks down on you. Like, if you fell for it, he looks down on you.
I mean, that whole area of the manosphere is... It was funny for a couple of years, and now it's like, oh, shit, you guys are really squeezing this lemon, and kind of brutal. But alas, we got a tight rip here. Very happy to see Julian is free. On to Ross, on to Snowden, on to the gentleman whose name is escaping me, but that was arrested in New York State for protecting or exercising his Second Amendment rights. His name is escaping me, but he deserves to be free too. Next up, pretty big deal in the world of Fediments this week. The Mutiny team disclosed issues with two of the largest public Fediments, and these issues stem from a DNS dependency.
Talk about this at length.
Okay, go for it.
So Fediments, right, is a Charming eCash protocol that basically at its core is a multi-sig custodian, right? The two largest public Fediments are three of four multi-sig custodians, right? So you have four Fediment guardians, you have four Fediment servers that are constantly need to be interconnected with each other, and they need to communicate with each other in order to process transactions. Now, these all are registered with domains, right? So they use DNS to connect to each other, and they use TLS to authenticate that connection. These two federations in question, right? One is called Bitcoin Principles and the other one is called Freedom One, one of their four, each of them, both of them had one of their four was behind a .xyz domain. The .xyz, and so there's this random spam blacklist company called Spam House that lists domains that they believe spam is being sent from. And they just decided to add every domain that is running a Fediment Guardian to their blacklist. The .xyz domain registrar blindly follows whatever Spam House says. So .xyz blocked those two .xyz guardians. So the two largest Fediments that were originally three of four, both had one go down. And there's no way in the Fediment, the way Fediment's currently set up, there's no way to rotate that domain or connect to it without DNS. Like, you can't connect directly via IP. So they're both essentially running as three of threes because the fourth of each of them is out. And so what that means is, and then also at the same time, like, when you run Fediments, and we've talked about this in the past, that it's like still very early in the Fediment project, the connections are like dropping in and out constantly. But if you have three of four, it's like usually three of them are always connected. But when you have three of three, all it takes is one drop off, intermittence, like drop off between them connecting to each other to stop the whole system from working. So as it stands right now, neither of these Fediments have rugged anybody, or have not intentionally rugged anybody. But their services are just constantly going up and down, whether they're working or whether they're not. Like, transactions process, transactions don't process. Transactions process, transactions don't process. So it's not a great situation. It's a pretty bad situation, to be honest. And if you are using one of them, you should withdraw your funds. And if, once again, as I just explained, if for some reason that isn't working, it might work in 15 minutes. It might work in an hour. I know that's not like a great answer. Now, the Mutiny guys specifically don't run the federations. They provide like a Noster interface, a Noster enabled interface where you can rate the different federations and choose which federation, each user can choose which federation they want to use. So they're like kind of powerless in this environment. So what they've done is they've essentially stopped you from within Mutiny joining a federation. To make matters worse, you can't actually, without shutting down the federation, you can't stop people from sending money in. The Mutiny guys can stop it in their interface, but like in Fediment code, like you can just send an on-chain transaction. There's no way to stop an on-chain transaction from coming in. So that is the current situation. On the positive side, the way Fediment's set up is you can withdraw on chain. So you don't have to worry about like Lightning gateways not having enough liquidity in these kind of like bank run type environments. You run into a lot of Lightning liquidity issues. So you can withdraw on chain if you want. Now, Cashew, which is the single sig Cashew, Charming eCash implementation, is Lightning only. So they can choose to like stop, you know, Mint operator can make it so you can't send funds in without shutting down the whole thing. And also Cashew is much simpler because it doesn't have the whole federation element. The federation element adds a lot of complexity to it. That has been pretty chaotic in Bitcoin land for the last few days. The good news is there's really not that much funds at risk. I think it's like each federation's like in the one Bitcoin range, something like that. Like it still was very, very early. And these things, like sometimes you don't like this in hindsight, like you look at this in hindsight and it seems like a ridiculous dependency. Like you just have a dependency on domain registrars.
Yeah. A lesson like, in dependencies, right, here, freaks.
Keep in mind, right? So there's basically eight guardians here in question, right? Four in each of these federations. They were all, my understanding is they were all added to the Spam House blacklist. it's just like the .com doesn't just blindly follow some random spam blacklist and block domains. But like the way Fediment is currently set up, like the .com registrar can essentially just end Fediments. You can just pick and choose. Like you have this massive central point of failure that can just pick and choose if a Fediment gets shut down or not. So in the beginning of this whole thing, my understanding is the Mutiny guys were talking to the Fediment team. Fediment is an open source project, you know, open source protocol. And they were saying there's no easy fix. There's no backwards compatible fix. Who knows like when we can remove this dependency, like all this other stuff. Then afterwards, like relatively recently, I think that's what Logan just pulled up.
Yeah. Pull that up. So Cody Lowe took to GitHub.
Supposedly they have some kind of fix that they're going to implement. I don't know if it works for existing federations.
Well, here's what Cody said in GitHub 2 days ago. Tracking issues for roadmap to remove the DNS dependency created by including the Guardian endpoints in the Federation config hashed into the Federation LD. They're going to remove the dependency and allow Guardians to rotate their endpoints, announce the API rotation. Other Guardians start using the new endpoint. Then when clients reconnect to an unchanged Guardian, they'll get a signed update from the change Guardian forwarded that they can authenticate and switch to for that Guardian specifically, building this based off discussions across devs and Eric Sirian's response to comment 5482. Feel free to modify and update as this progresses. Tasks below are just stubs. We'll fill with implementation details as those get finalized. And there's been a bit of discussion in that repo.
Is it backwards compatible? Like, can existing federations do that? Does he say?
Derive commitment, Guardian creates API. I don't know. He doesn't say it here. I see Daniel from Block TBD say maybe DIDS could solve this. Could DIDS be used here, given they provide dynamic routing capabilities and do not suffer from the same centralization risk?
I mean, so what Cashew, supposedly what Cali is implementing is that instead of, first of all, they don't have the interconnected issue. So like if a domain gets blocked, they can just switch. But what he wants to do is he wants to use NPubs. He wants to use Nostr NPubs as the identification and then use Nostr as the communication layer. So, I mean, presumably you could do something similar with DIDS. But either way, the key point is the two largest federations, which are not that large, currently have this issue. And it's yet to be seen when an update will be shipped that will allow them to get the fourth Guardian online. And in the meantime, and whether or not that would even be backwards compatible in the first place, and they might have to just shut down the whole thing and relaunch to begin with. So if you do have money in one of these two federations, or pretty much any federation, I would say you should withdraw your money ASAP. And don't panic if you go and it's not working at the time you try and do it. Because it just means that it probably means, like, I don't know who runs these federations, but it probably means that they're unwittingly have connection issues. It is a very time-consuming technical process to run these federations as it currently stands today.
So are we defining this as part of the process of getting this open source federated protocol up and running and fleshing out the kinks in the protocol, or is this dependency a critical vulnerability to the potential viability of a protocol like Fediment?
No, I mean, I think it's definitely the former, right? And a lot of these things, like, you don't realize until you actually use it in practice. So like you test it in practice, you test it in the real world, and these things happen. And it's fixable and it will be fixed eventually. Is my belief. It seems like like Cody explained, right? It's like he's not even solving the DNS issue. It's just like lets you rotate, right? You should be able to rotate. And I would go even further, particularly for more longer term federations. And this is in their roadmap, but like you need to be able to rotate out a key altogether. Like just because someone
federation member.
Yeah, just because someone's willing to be a guardian today, first of all, doesn't mean they might be willing to be a guardian in 2 years. And then second of all, they might get hit by a bus, they might get thrown in jail, they might turn out to be a con man or someone you don't want to be a part of your federation. And as it stands right now, you have to essentially shut down the whole thing. And there's no way, you know, there's no way to gracefully do that. Like historically, it's always been difficult to gracefully and ethically shut down a custodian. It's even more difficult if it's a multi-sig custodian, just like in principle, right?
It's all part of the growing process, freaks.
Yeah.
Dependencies.
I would say growing pains.
Yeah, growing pains does highlight. I mean, it does take a level of technical competency, particularly around the ability to maintain and keep hardware up and running. And then edge cases like this DNS dependency working around that. And I think it's safe to say we are squarely in the hashtag reckless stage of these Chami Emit protocols. So if you weren't around or you don't remember when the Lightning Network first launched, maybe that's something Fedimint and Cashew can do better. Not saying that they're, I shouldn't say do better, but I think people have been very upfront with the trade-offs and the nascency of these protocols is, hey, if you put money into these protocols, they could be at risk because they are so young and still developing. So with the Lightning Network, when it first launched, that was the mantra back then. Was like, it's reckless to test this stuff out. You're putting money on, you could lose it or it could get locked up. You should have the same mentality with these Chami Emit protocols at this current stage. In the future, I doubt we'll have problems like this that need to be discovered like they were this week, but just know if you are going to use these Chami Emit protocols that you should only use an amount of Bitcoin that you're comfortable with losing. And then again, it's not to say that if you have money in either of these two mints that are currently having connection issues, it's lost, as Matt mentioned. You can get them off. It may take multiple tries, but just be aware.
I will say that this was just for like a little extra color. This was like solutions were trying to be solved behind the scenes. And then it came to the Mutiny team's attention that someone just sent like 7 Bitcoin into one of the Fedimints. And they're like, okay, we got to make sure that this has got to be out in the public. People should not be sending that kind of money in. Yeah. And I know for a fact that guy got his money out. So that was good.
That's reckless. Yeah. That's reckless.
That's more than reckless.
Put 7 Bitcoin in one of these mints.
Yeah. And this wasn't like, yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, don't just like send all your Bitcoin into a mint. I want to be clear here. While they both share the Chamin eCash aspect, like Cashew is a fundamentally different protocol and it's a much simpler protocol. There will also be many rugs on Cashew. I will say on Fedimint though, this is like different. It's a little bit of a new beast in terms of threat model where like the custodians could accidentally rug, which is like what's happening right now. Like they don't even like.
Well, I think rug implies taking the money and running. They're not necessarily rugging. They're anchoring. They're anchoring your sats into that mint right now.
Yeah. But like, can you access them? Do you have the ability to remove them? And also keep in mind, like if one of those remaining 3 go down, like permanently, then we'd be in a really fucked position. So try and keep calm, and remove your funds. Like, don't panic. But
shout out to all,
try and get them out ASAP.
Shout out to all the stress developers right now that have been working on this protocol and are having a big oh shit moment. My thoughts are with you.
I see Robert in the YouTube chat asking where the Nostr live feed is. It's rhr.tv/stream. And that's where it always lives.
Yeah, YouTube chat is dead today. I think zap.stream officially killed it.
Nostr stream is lit right now.
This rep of RHR was also brought to you by our good friends at Stack. Stack is a cloud sourcing platform that combines the power of humans and AI to make it easy for you to complete complex tasks as a business. They are currently looking for a technical product manager for their coding bounties program. So if you want to go to stackwork.com and apply for this job, I would highly do it. Paul and team at Stack are building one of the most incredible and exciting products on the market right now. If you listen to Citadel Dispatch or TFTC with Carlino from Digital Witness, he explained how Digital Witness used Stack to confirm the results of the Guatemalan presidential election last year. And Stack basically enables you to put out all these tasks. In the case of Digital Witness, they had a combination of AI and humans complete tasks to prove that votes looked a certain way and said a certain thing. And they got paid out in Bitcoin for it. So they're looking for a technical product manager for their bounties program. So go check them out. Stackwork, that's stackwork.com. Next topic on the list, OpenSats has announced long-term support for Kale and William Kasarian, a.k.a. JB55. Kale, obviously, working on the Cashew Mint protocol, and William Kasarian, the founder of Damas.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about both of these. Two legends getting Kale's his first major support from OpenSats, and Will getting moved over to an LTS grant, a long-term support grant, which are 2 years until renewal, and you have, you know, the developers have strong guarantees on how much they're going to get paid every month over those 2 years, and the renewal process is a much smoother process than if you're on a regular grant. The LTS grants are really something I'm very proud of at OpenSats, and I think like in Kale's case, it's a perfect example with what the Fediment devs are going through. Is like these, you know, users and companies and other open source projects all rely on these open source protocols, and the protocol devs are often not compensated and have no financial security. And what the Fediment open source protocol devs have had to deal with over the last week, 2 weeks, is a perfect example why it's important to have some of them working on it full time and having financial security. So I think the proof is in the pudding on that one.
Yeah. Shout out to OpenSats. Shout out to Kale and JB55, the inventor of Zaps. You're zapping us right now via zap.stream. You can thank JB55 for that.
I rushed making today's list, and I see someone in the comments mention Strike. I didn't put on the list that Strike launched in the UK, which is massive.
Yeah. They also just launched Strike no-fee DCA.
Yeah, what's the deal? That's just like one of their promos, like one of their flash promos? Or no-fee DCA?
Jack tweeted out 3 hours ago, yo, we just launched no-fee DCA Strike. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, your DCA order on Strike is on the house.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Love to see it.
Yeah, big launch in the UK too. Strike crushing it a couple weeks after Europe. Great presentation at BTC Prague explaining the differences between proof of work and proof of stake. Jack's on fire right now. Keep crushing it, brother.
Damn right.
And now, we get to the section of the show, the new section of the show. Human Rights Foundation story of the week. This week it's coming out of Russia, where a woman on trial for pro-Ukraine donation during a family visit in Yekaterinburg, Russia. Kenzia Karlina, a Russian-American ballerina who lives in Los Angeles, California, was arrested by Russian authorities. Her crime, making a $51.80 donation to pro-Ukraine charity, is deemed an act of treason under Russian law. Her trial will be held in August. If found guilty, she faces a potential 20-year prison sentence. Karolina's case illustrates the severe measures dictator Vladimir Putin enforces against any form of financial aid, even modest amounts, to opposition movements. It highlights why Russian human rights groups like the Anti-Corruption Foundation have found it useful to receive payments in Bitcoin to help protect the identities of their donors. If you want to hear more of these stories, the Human Rights Foundation has a weekly newsletter. Go to financialfreedomreport.org. Sign up for that. And yeah, one of the benefits of Bitcoin. We mentioned earlier, nobody knows who donated the 8 Bitcoin to help pay for Julian Assange's jet back to Australia. The same sort of pseudonymity can be applied to human rights activists donating to the causes they deem worthy. So instead of paying via fiat rails where you have a credit card or a bank account with your personal information connected to it, you can send a Bitcoin UTXO that, if used correctly, can be completely separated from your identity.
Yeah, I mean, I would go even further and say this is why it's so important that we have robust Bitcoin privacy tools.
Yeah.
Because while, you know, Bitcoin is often strictly better than the surveilled and controlled traditional financial system, as shown in this story, which is fucking insane. She's facing 20 years in jail for a $50 donation. It's still, you know, it's not private by default, and people's Bitcoin transactions often do get tracked back to them. So it's incredibly important to have robust Bitcoin privacy tools, there's many legal reasons why you would want financial privacy. Financial privacy in and of itself is not a crime and should not be treated as one.
No. Another reason why it's important to work through the early day kinks in these Chami Mint protocols is because you get native privacy paying in eCash tokens. With some caveats about anonymity set and liquidity within the mint, but directionally, a sufficiently robust liquidity within a Chami Mint could provide you privacy guarantees that are not afforded on the main chain.
Small amounts, like a $50 donation.
Yeah.
And you can make it over Lightning too, and the recipient won't even know you paid from a mint.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be $51.80, 20 years in prison. Okay, that's insane. It's insane. Ugh. All right. We got the software update of the show coming up, which means that we've got to read the boost from last week. Top four boosts from Rabbit Hole Recap 310. We spend more on debt than war. At Eric99 boosted 333,000 sats. We boost shamed him last week and he came through big. Shout out to BTC NIM on July 14th, 2022. They predicted minimal boost would be 50,000 for a shout out. After the halving, minimal boost should have been 25,000 sats. Change of plan. Till Bitcoin doubles all time high or I lose my job, 50,000 sats is the floor. Support your favorite podcast. Thank you, Eric.
Love it. Love it. I didn't realize it was a halving thing.
Bateman's Randers trolling him in the replies to that boost. A not very humble boost from Eric99. At user 645.
Zap boosters.
Yeah. at user 64530088 boosted 125,000 sats. You guys please discuss Signal in some more detail. Dell seems to like the trade-off balance, but I've also heard it's an NSA/CIA project, and we've all heard Tucker Carlson talk about how the deep state read his texts leading up to the Putin interview. I'm pretty clueless in all this, just trying to formulate a view as to whether it's a good tool to use for everyday texting or whether it's compromised. Thanks.
It's a great tool to use for everyday texting. First of all, the Signal clients, the actual apps that you have on your phone, are open source. They provide very strong security guarantees. There's no proof that they've been compromised. There are many eyes on that code. Now, could you have a potential theoretical, like, targeted attack on a user that updates their Signal client? Maybe, but users, you know, governments don't have to do that. What they do is they compromise your phone, they compromise your device that you have Signal on. So if what Tucker's saying is true, it is likely that either him or the person he was communicating with had a compromised device, something like Pegasus that has full access to your device. Yeah. And then, of course, can read anything in any app you have, including Signal. And that's why Signal's disappearing message feature is absolutely essential. Because if you set, for instance, you set disappearing messages with a contact for a week, if they get compromised at some point, or if you get compromised at some point, there's only 1 week of conversations there. That disappearing messages element is incredibly important to have enabled if you are concerned about your messages getting compromised. Now, I personally think Tucker has been quite irresponsible about this. I mean, he's also promoted Telegram, which is not encrypted by default and I think should be treated as spyware. Like, they save so much information on their servers about users. While Signal intentionally does the opposite. But yeah, I would say, you know, from a targeted attack point of view, most electronic devices should not be considered quote unquote NSA proof. I will also say that on the Tucker side, like, who is he communicating with, to organize a Putin meeting? And what kind of lists were those people on? And who were they sharing their own information with? Even if they weren't compromised, they might have been sharing information. In general, I think Tucker has either intentionally or unintentionally damaged the privacy of many people that want privacy. It's been incredibly irresponsible and frustrating to see. And I've had to answer this question over and over and over again. The biggest issue I have with Signal is that it does require a phone number to sign up. That phone number is not exposed to your contacts anymore, which is a win. Now, the reason they require a phone number is to prevent spam. They don't want people they're using it as a spam friction mechanism. I think it's a flawed way of doing it. I think they could probably do it with just Bitcoin payments. But that is their reasoning for doing that. There is an open source project called SimpleX that doesn't require phone numbers and you can run your own server, which is promising. I will say it's not nearly as reliable as Signal. The best part of Signal to me is that it gives you relatively strong privacy guarantees, particularly if you use disappearing messages, while having amazing, simple, reliable UX. If you send a Signal message, you know your recipient's going to get it. You don't have to worry about lost messages. It sends pictures and videos in full resolution. It has stickers. It has emoji responses. It has everything that someone that is addicted to WhatsApp, right? The 5 billion users of WhatsApp have grown to expect out of a messaging app. So that's why Signal particularly is a really cool case study in a scalable, open source, privacy focused project. And also it's completely run by a nonprofit, which is a cool model to see.
Yeah. Still a fan of Signal. I do agree. I think Tucker, I imagine it's unintentional, but did lead many people astray by blaming Signal for the fact that the U.S. government got access to his messages where his phone was likely backdoored.
The suspicious part is that he's had people explain the concept to him about how he was likely compromised, and he continues to repeat it. And he should be welcome to interview Putin, but then he interviews Putin, and then he does like a glowing interview of Durov, founder of Telegram, and basically promotes Telegram to his entire audience. So that sequence of events makes me a little bit suspicious. It's like, what the fuck, dude? But it could be unintentional. He is a boomer. You know, that might be his style. Just talk confidently about stuff he doesn't know, and not admit when he's wrong. It is disappointing and frustrating, and it has set back. It puts a lot of people at risk. It puts a lot of people at risk, and that's disappointing.
Yeah. MVK is letting us all know in the Zap.stream comments, all phones are pwned. So beware.
I mean, that's the point, right? It's like, there's no need. There's no need for them to compromise Signal directly. If the NSA can just, and it's not even just the NSA, right? Like the crazy part about Pegasus is that it's run by this Israeli software
Mossad.
Company.
It's Mossad front.
Yeah, they came out of Mossad. They came out of the same program of the KYC that is done, the company that does the KYC for
what is it
Twitter.
Like Unit 8200 or something like that?
Yes. And but the crazy part is like it used to be, you know, maybe the U.S. had these capabilities, and maybe Russia had these capabilities, and maybe China and Israel had these capabilities. But now they just sell it. They just sell licenses to it. So like Zimbabwe can get like, they can pwn 10 phones for $100,000 or whatever. You know, it's like very accessible.
And
that's why we've seen it become much more widespread, is that just any run of the mill dictator or a company, like rich person that wants to compromise someone, can just go out and buy the licenses. There's no easy answer there. Use less electronic devices. But for the most part, this is obviously an incredibly nuanced conversation, and we've gone on for a long time, but Signal has very strong privacy guarantees. It's open source. It is incredibly usable. It has a decent network effect at this point. It's at like 500 million people, which is important because if you have a messaging tool, like you need to have people to message. And I think it's an overwhelmingly strong force for good in the world. And particularly Meredith Whitaker, their new CEO, who came out of big tech, I think is an incredibly good voice for the movement. She's incredibly strong. She's eloquent. And she handles her own really well.
Yes, she does. Yes, she does. Beware, freaks. All phones are pwned. Governments are funding startups that are pwning your phones.
Also, by the way, one last thing. With Signal, you can use it with any VoIP number. Like they don't block, like a lot of services block numbers you get from like apps and stuff, like that you don't actually have a SIM card for, because those are like separate phone numbers, like they're like flagged. Signal doesn't block any of those numbers. So like an app like MySudo or Hushed or something like that, where you can just get like infinite numbers for a low amount of money, you can just spin up new Signal identities using them. Also, rotating phones is a nice, simple left curve method of because if they compromise one phone and then you rotate, then they have to compromise the new one. And if you're not like moving your SIM card to that new one, it could take some time for them to compromise the new one.
Blockstream.
I will say I got
a stream.
I have a good friend who works for Citizen Lab, and they do a lot of Pegasus research. They like, they're so like, they're so badass that they submit 0 days to Apple, right? Like they like, they'll find a vulnerability in iOS and they'll submit the vulnerability to Apple. And he did a Pegasus check on my phone. He does them at a lot of HRF events. He's pretty awesome. And I did not have Pegasus.
That's good to know. Somebody communicates with you a lot. So,
and there's like a little bit of a disappointment there, you know.
Yeah, we're not like, big enough
yet. What am I even doing with my life? Like, I feel like.
What was the attempt?
You gotta work harder.
What was it? Solar Winds was the one where you could just like, they were getting it on people's phones by just clicking malicious links.
No, Solar Winds was the. Aren't they like a B2B company that does like a bunch of backend? They got like ransomware, didn't they?
I forget. Could be wrong.
Yeah, but like Pegasus, like there's like zero click Pegasus vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Where like you don't, the user doesn't even have to click and then they get infected.
Yeah. People are calling you a spook since you don't have a Pegasus on your phone. So try harder.
I'm clearly not doing it.
At OK Sharp boosted 88,888 sats, eights across the board. Palindrome boost. Shameless shill for TabConf in Atlanta, October 23rd to 26th. Go to tabconf.com. See you at the takeover in Nashville on Thursday afternoon. Eight Mithrander boosted 7,777 sats, sevens across the board. Palindrome boost. Not as big as Eric99, who we were trolling earlier in the boost section. It's been 63 days. Since Samurai were indicted. And that was 2 days ago, so it's probably been 65 days now. Or a day ago, 64 days. That is it for the boost.
Free Samurai. I got distracted because NVK is in the comments talking in all caps, which is, it's important to speak clearly, and I'm glad that he's come along to the cap side. But he had like the most basic bitch answer, which is that they infected my phone when they checked for Pegasus. Obviously, that was my first instinct too, right? It's like that's the best way to infect. But they're very deliberate in how they do it, and obviously, they do not connect anything to your phone when they check. You basically extract a file that they analyze.
Interesting.
Because that would be horrible if they were just like plugging in a bunch of like activist phones.
Yeah. All right. Software section. I got to do a quick exit here. Speaking of MVK, cold card MK4 version 5.3.2 and Q version 1.2.2 have been released. Big release. Push TX has been implemented in both devices. And this allows you to broadcast transactions by pairing your cell phone with your cold card, whether that's the key with the MK4.
There's no pairing. You just tap it.
Yeah, I mean, tap the NFC. Yeah.
Yeah. But like there's no, you don't have to do any set. The phone just needs to have a browser. Yeah. You don't have to have an app on the phone or anything.
Yeah. And uses mempool.space to broadcast.
Yeah. I guess anyone can, they've opened the spec. Like anyone can run a push TX server. I think cold card .com is running one, but so is Mempool. They partnered with the Mempool guys and made sure that Mempool had it up and running.
Logan, he's asking us to share the video on pushtx.org. Since you were sponsoring the show, we will show the video.
I think one of the issues is basically if you're using QR codes, if you're using QR codes to sign the transaction, right? So like, let's say you set it up on Sparrow on your computer and you don't want to use the SD card, you want to use QR code and you scan it with the cold card Q. And then you have the transaction signed and then you need to broadcast the transaction. Usually you would then hold, you know, the cold card QR screen up to the camera. That process is much more time consuming and difficult just because the screen is worse quality than, you know, your computer screen or your phone screen. So that skips that step because once you have the transaction signed, all you have to do is tap it on your phone and it's broadcast. There's also some interesting implications there where you can have like an emergency pre-signed transaction that goes to a different wallet of yours. And at any time you can just tap the device to your phone and broadcast that transaction, which I think is pretty cool.
Just a quick, somebody's trying to steal my wallet. It's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty cool. Cold card Q. Consider getting it. I brought it in because I had the SD card that I put my firmware on right here. So I got to upload the firmware. I haven't updated it yet, but that's why I brought it.
I will just say, like, I'm an SD card maxi. Like, the QR code stuff. But my favorite part about the QR code stuff is verifying a receive address. Make sure a receive address is actually derived from my private keys. But when it comes to actually signing transactions, I like using the SD cards.
I don't know. I like using the Cuba Sparrow for the QR stuff.
But like, have you actually signed a transaction using the QR code?
It's the only way I've been signing transactions.
I guess. Okay, fine. Well, the big ones, the QR codes get like monstrous. That's another update they made, by the way, is it now shows more outputs on the screen when you're verifying. Like if you have crazy outputs, if you have a crazy number of outputs, historically, I think it showed like the first 10 and then it was like plus 70 more outputs. And like, it just didn't show you the other outputs. Now it shows more outputs on the screen. So you can actually verify it on the screen, which is a nice big win.
Yeah. Shout out to you, NBK. And the rest of the team at Cold Card for pushing this, or CoinKite. Everybody working on Cold Card and the other products. All right, two more things on the software updates list. Phoenix Wallet Android version 2.2.4 has been released, and iOS version 2.2.6 has been released. It looks like a bunch of fixes. Nothing crazy in this release. And then BitAx Supra came out with the fourth major revision with BM1368 ASIC from the Antminer S21. So these guys got their hands on S21s early. It's cool to see. Because the newest member of the BitAx lineup, the BitAx Supra, is working. Again, it's a single BM1368 ASIC from the S21 running around 620 gigahertz a second. Looks like Matt left. His pups were getting a little rowdy there. I need to get my BitAx for the bookcase here. Freaks, we don't want to hold you from the presidential election. Logan, what do you think? Is it going to be... we're going to have like a cogent back and forth here? Do you think there's going to be some...
They're just going to call each other the Soy Boy Jack.
Soy Boy Jack? Okay. Any debate predictions, Matt?
I got nothing. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? Did you see what is like, is RFK like live streaming the debate?
And oh, yeah.
Like putting himself
he's answering. He's going the debate.
What's going on
the
there?
Debate moderators are going to ask the question. He's going to mute and he's going to answer. And he's going to pretend like he's part of it. It's going to be funny.
But you're going to, like, if you go to that, do you get to see Trump and Biden as well? It's like,
it's probably like him at his laptop, like doing like a Twitch live stream where he's got it. And he's like, they're asking the question. He's pausing, answering, fast forwarding, waiting for the next question, responding.
I found out about that today. I'm pretty curious how that looks like what goes on there.
You'll be able to find out in 4 minutes when the debate starts. So,
no, it starts in an hour and 4 minutes.
Oh, it starts at 9 Eastern?
9 Eastern, yeah.
They're rolling these 80-year-olds at 9 p.m. Eastern?
Yeah.
God. Oh, man. I have to go to a dinner. I'm going to miss it, but I think it's good. It'd be too masochistic to sit there and watch it live. There'll be plenty of clips.
I'm really curious how the RFK thing plays out.
I'm more curious about if Biden's going to be able to actually compose himself.
Yeah, I mean, 90 minutes.
It's 90 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be 10:30 p.m.
Holy shit.
By the time it all ends. Did you see like CNN explaining how the mute button works?
Yeah. Yeah. That, and they're extending the delay. Instead of a 7-second delay, they're pushing it to 2 minutes so they can edit on the go.
Like the live delay?
Yeah, the lag. There's not going to be any audience. It's very weird.
I mean, what is that for? Like, are they just going to, so they can censor shit, I guess, if they want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's a question.
DNCNN, you know? That's what,
Well, I mean, Trump agreed to do CNN. I'm surprised at CNN myself, but I guess Where do you do it then?
I don't know. It's clown world stuff. I'm going long memes before this dinner. If I could,
I'm just glad Assange is out of jail. He's home.
There'll probably be some gloating about that.
I just had a pep in my step the whole week. I just, no care in the world. It just felt good. Yeah. It just really felt good. That was just a big win. I want to sit on that win for a while.
Yeah, let's end on a big win. Shout out to you, Julian. We got a W on the board this week, Freedom Fighters. Thank you for all you did, Julian.
Damn right. Much love, Julian. Stay on Blastack Sets.
Peace and love.